central bank digital currency and a stable coin, there's not much difference except for an on and off switch.
The fact that Trump tweeted this, it's not the pureness of signal that I think many people are excited about. I don't think Trump understands Bitcoin.
I don't think the solution to get a person off of a sinking ship is to put them on another sinking ship. Like, let's just get them onto dry land. Let's dock them. Let's get them into Bitcoin. That's what we need to be focused on.
Whether they lower the rates or not, like, who cares, man? Like, the system is finished. It's dead. Whether it's 4%, 1%, they can't afford any of it. So all these theatrics about, you know, refinancing and all that, like, what are you trying to save? You're finished. You're out. You're bankrupt. There's nothing about you that's left anymore.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I've got Tony and Adam with me this week. Gents, let's jump right into the news. Already up first, so this was a big story for a lot of Bitcoiners. So there was this guy tweeted that his friend got hacked for his entire USDT balance, a Tether, $85,000. And the CEO of Tether, Paolo, said, "We blocked in collaboration with law enforcement the 85,977 USDT stolen." So, Tony, you have been saying for quite some time that stablecoins are just CBDCs that haven't been yet activated or weaponized. Would love to hear your commentary on this tweet.
I'm really happy that this guy can potentially get his money back, but I'm also happy that he just confirmed what I've been saying all along, that a central bank digital currency and a stablecoin, there's not much difference except for an on and off switch. If they can block these transactions, they will comply to any government, you know, overreach or, you know, a mandate to block anything. You know, they'll come up with the rules and they'll, and, you know, Tether will enforce them if they want to remain compliant, which I believe is their intention. They mentioned specifically that some of their concerns, you know, was like regulatory overreach. But at the same time, they also mentioned that they have full intentions of, you know, complying with the Genius Act and whatever other act comes there afterwards. So stablecoins, they have a very specific purpose as far as I'm concerned. If you need them, you know, very, very short term for something good, do not put your savings in a stablecoin, because you will at some point lose them if the politics around that coin change. And, you know, if you believe that, you know, it's safer than a bank, you are, you know, sadly mistaken. In fact, it's worse than a bank, because that thing can really disappear at a click of a button. So use, you know, the stable coins for the purpose that you need them for. Do not save in them, for God's sake. Look at something like Bitcoin in proper self-custody. It is the safer bet.
Yeah, I completely agree. I sympathize with people who can't even afford a hardware wallet, you know, and much less spend a lot to, you know, save in Bitcoin on a global scale. It's easy in the West to just say, well, just buy Bitcoin. So I recognize utility. It's basically a faster, more efficient rails for, you know, fiat, if that's what you need in some circumstances. But I think a lot of people forget that just because it's, you know, blockchain technology or something doesn't mean it's not just another shitcoin being used that you're operating.
But,
so,
but I'll add something more to this, just in case it wasn't clear. To me, this also can be like, you can, depending on which rabbit hole you want to go down, this can also be seen as a trap, right? Like, they send these these stable coins to countries that desperately need something better than their local currency. So all these people get all excited, you know, that now they don't have to use, you know, that local, you know, worthless paper. Now they use the next best worthless paper, which is the dollar, right? So for them, it's an upgrade. And so you get them to use it and they get all comfortable in this. And then when the time is right, what happens? You know, it's like leading the sheep into a specific area and then, boom, switching everything off, because now you've got a whole bunch of people dependent on you, so you can literally do whatever you want with them, because if they don't comply, well, there's no more money. So what's the result of that? It's 100% pure digital enslavement. So be very careful, you know, with your use of stable coins, because they can and will be weaponized under the right circumstances. Don't assume there's a friendly government or a friendly politician. That is a fairy tale. I mean, by now it should be crystal clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Adam, what do you think?
I don't think this is a new concept, right? I think the only problem that people are having is wrapping their minds around the fact that Tether is effectively a CBDC, USDT, whatever stablecoin flavor wrapper you want to put on it. They effectively are CBDCs in essentially every way that matters. There's a lot of argument online and people doing what I see is, you know, basically simping for stable coins, whether it's from the perspective of, you know, Tether, you know, maybe they're supportive of Tether and some of the things that they do, which, don't get me wrong, I think there are a lot of great things that Tether does and stands for, but I don't think that that necessarily overwrites the dangers that I see in it. And so I've always been vocally against Tether, despite a lot of the even quote unquote Bitcoin community supporting them. And I could certainly be on the wrong side of the fence on some of it, but I've taken a very vocal stance against the development of Tether and the entrenchment of Tether into our own financial system, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. Even some of my best friends I've had difficult conversations with. And a lot of them, in fact, I don't really know too many people other than maybe the two of you that agree with me on this so much. But I've been, for example, and just kind of give a little bit of light to what I think is maybe currently happening and maybe a potential vibe shift, is I have simply tweeted the words, Tether is a CBDC, just like that, on my ex profile multiple times, whether I was reposting something or just those words by themselves. And for a long time, I would get a lot of negative responses to that. People, you know, calling me names and telling me that, of course, I was wrong. And the funny thing is, I reposted an article very recently. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 days ago. And I said it again. I said, Tether is a CBDC. But this time I didn't really get as much of a negative reaction from X, from Twitter. I certainly think that there's a little bit of a shift in the sentiment around things after the Genius Act. So obviously, for those that don't know, the Genius Act passed, and I think it's signed into law now by the president of the U.S., and it essentially regulates and defines a lot of aspects around stablecoins. And so ultimately what that means is it further entrenches it into our legislative process and legitimizes stablecoins, right? And so I think they're going to use them for a number of different things. I think the United States is definitely wanting to utilize CBDCs. There we go. You know, Tether or stablecoins, whatever. But my point is, I've always said Tether is a CBDC, and I think people are finally starting to wake up to that after they see all of the entrenchment with the government, because that was really probably their main argument, is it's not, you know, it's not a CBDC because it's not issued by the central bank, aka the Federal Reserve. And my argument there is, you know, Tether itself is a central bank that offers a digital currency. It is a CBDC. And I don't care, you know, what, if you want to be, you know, I don't know,
Semantics, man. Yeah. Don't fall for the semantics.
The semantics, it's not us, but it's exactly them. But we control them, but it's not us.
100%. Right?
And like, so, how stupid do they think you are, man? Like, I mean, it's obvious that it's like, there's no limit to that.
I know. So, you know, really what it comes down to, and my argument's always been, well, okay, forget about the semantics for a second. Let's just focus on the reasons why we all can agree that CBDCs are dangerous. Those same dangers exist with Tether. You know, so far, I think it hasn't been too bad, in the sense that most of the activities that Tether's been doing, such as like seizing people's funds, seizing and freezing. It's mostly for activities that we most of us would agree are objectively bad, right? People hacking people or terrorist activities, whatever you want to call it. But that's what, you know, that's the flavor of the week, you know, right now. Like that switch, like you were talking about, Tony, that can be flipped at any time. And all of a sudden the good guys become the bad guys just because, you know, a bunch of Bitcoiners are wanting to, you know, liberate people all over the world. And it goes against the objective or the narrative of any current establishment. And as most of you know, every 4 or 8 years in the US, the establishment flip-flops back and forth. And a lot of the sentiment around many different aspects change on a frequent basis. So it's only, at best, it's only a matter of 4 years before the sentiment changes and we become the bad guys again.
Yeah. It's sort of like the notion of, you know, you don't want to have laws against hate speech because the people who will determine what is hate speech will be the last people you want deciding what is hate speech, right? I mean, it's you just need freedom of speech. And if you have the ability to censor, to freeze, to unwind from transactions, eventually that's going to be used against you. The other thing I would say is that the further entrenched that the globe becomes in sort of the US financial system, because they're pretty much dollar stable coins, right? There aren't like that many pound euro stable coins. It gives a more intimate level of control to the US government over, like right now, most people in Africa don't have, you know, a stash of, you know, US assets, right? They were able to freeze Russian assets because they held US treasuries. You can't do that at the individual level to people around the world. The moment that stablecoins become ubiquitous, like now they suddenly have that level of control at an individual level, it would seem. So I think people just need to caution themselves. I understand for convenience right now, hopefully it's not activated while you're holding a big bag of you know, Tether, but use it transactionally if you really have to, and then get out of it in any way that you can. That's kind of my general recommendation. All righty, we've got Western Union CEO says that the bank is looking into offering stablecoin products in its digital wallets to customers around the world. Stablecoins are an opportunity, not a threat. I think the irony here is that they obviously are a threat. You wouldn't have to transition your business if they weren't a threat, because it is a lot easier and cheaper to send, you know, Tether around the world than it is to pay a flat fee plus, what would we say, 15-20% for, you know, a Western Union transaction, get remittances back home, that sort of thing. Adam, why don't you take this one first? Do you anticipate with the Genius Act passing, now we've got Western Union, are stable coins just going to be, are there going to be like 20 flavors, 50, 100 flavors of stable coins?
Maybe. Although I think that there will be some degree of a shelling point, if you will, for Tether. I think just because of their market dominance and their head start, they're certainly going to have the biggest swinging stick, if you want to put it that way. So I think that that's much less important, mostly because, of course, it's a stable coin. It's not something that people are going to necessarily, you know, invest in or speculatively trade, because it's pegged to the dollar. So at least from that perspective, I don't think it's as big of a deal. But I guess my perspective on the entire thing is pretty pessimistic, because I actually think that it's going to work pretty well. I think it's going to be attractive to a lot of people all over the world. And we were texting about this last night, but I think it's going to be pretty successful. So if you think about the perspective from somebody in perhaps a country that is uses a currency that's losing its value much faster than the other currencies in the world, predominantly the US dollar, it's probably a much easier step to just get somebody into a digital wallet that looks like they're just holding dollars. They feel like dollars. They look like dollars, that have the same, essentially the same value nominally. They can buy the same amount of things, right? Whether it's, you know, our traditional digital dollar that we've had, or even a physical paper bill compared to USDT, they're both going to taste the same to these people in other countries. And so that step is so much smaller than switching somebody over into Bitcoin, which has always been my approach. I mean, I've never agreed with saying, oh, well, let's take the baby step and get them into Tether first, and then maybe we'll get them into Bitcoin later. I have never agreed with that. I think that is absolutely the wrong approach. I mean, I don't think the solution to get a person off of a sinking ship is to put them on another sinking ship. Like, let's just get them onto dry land. Let's dock them. Let's get them into Bitcoin. That's what we need to be focused on. And so I think that that's really what we should be striving for as Bitcoiners, is, you know, the three of us, anybody watching this, listening to this, just share Bitcoin with those people and continue pushing for Bitcoin, because some people will listen. Some people will take that and that rope, the life raft, or the whatever you want to call it. And they will be saved with Bitcoin. Now, the people that are going to be jumping into these stablecoins with Tether, I'm 100% certain at some point they will fail. I don't know if it's going to be in the next 5 years, 10 years, 50 years. I don't know. But they will fail because they're pegged to a failing currency. And that's just fiat in general. Whether you want to be specific with certain types of fiat currency, it doesn't matter. All fiat is going to fail over time. That's how it's designed. So, you know, I'd rather bite the bullet now and get people on the Bitcoin life raft. But people will, I think, by large, all over the world, eat this stuff up. They're going to love this. Now when they previously weren't able to get access to the dollar, now they can get Tether, and it's going to feel like the same thing to them. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be pretty popular, unfortunately.
I think you're probably right. Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree that it'll be popular. But I mean, for a lot of people, it'll be popular out of necessity, not because it's necessarily what they pick, right? All these stable coins acts, these are just ways to extend the lifeline of the dollar. But like you said, it's a failing currency. So at some point, this whole thing is going to come collapsing anyhow, because it's backed up by nothing. Those that who need it, you know, desperately because their local currency is worth, you know, rubbish, well, of course they're going to embrace it. But again, it keeps people stuck in the old bad habits. You know, a lot of people, you know, they value convenience over thinking, right? And doing the work. So if it was up to me, I'd completely eliminate stablecoins and draw people right into proper Bitcoin education. Because the lesson here is very simple. You cannot trust any money that is backed up by human beings. It doesn't matter who makes it and who controls it. It's very simple. If there's a human being behind it making decisions for it, it's complete rubbish. It's worth nothing. You shouldn't put a single penny of your time and energy in it. You can use it for whatever specific purpose, very specific and short term. But to save your time and energy in something that you know some piece of shit at some point is going to use against you, that is mental illness, my friend. So again, I said before 2008, you could argue maybe we didn't have, you know, a way to do it. But after 2008, there's no excuse. Do the work. It's not that hard. 6-7 new steps you have to learn. Boom, you're home free.
Well said. Gents, we spent a lot of time on stablecoins. Let's hustle through these last few. So first one, we've got Mark Moss. He was responding to Trump sharing the quote greatest Bitcoin explanation of all time. I think this was Peter von Volkenberg back years ago. And Mark Moss says, POTUS says, Bitcoin is amazing. The U.S. must lead the world with it. Your financial advisor says it's a scam, too volatile and risky. And what about 16 million other altcoins? I think very astute. Now, I would say the fact that Trump tweeted this it's not the pureness of signal that I think many people are excited about. I don't think Trump understands Bitcoin. I think he understands that there's something to it, but he's got the World Liberty Fi project and they're investing in shitcoins and they're kind of all over the place. The Strategic Reserve hasn't gone anywhere. If he really understood Bitcoin, I think he would say we need to do something about this. But I would be curious, Tony, if you want to take this one first, I'm going to share on LinkedIn a little bit to reach some of a more normie audience. I've talked about how financial advisors are violating their fiduciary duty if they aren't talking about Bitcoin. Tony, I would be curious to hear what your message to those folks would be.
It's definitely an unexpected tweet to see, but you know, I've learned a long time ago not to trust politicians. So I don't know what the real intentions behind this is. Could be theatrics, could be just, you know, to piss somebody off that we don't know about. It could be anything, really. So, but again, you know, don't believe the words, watch their actions. Since day one, how much of the marketing has actually come true? They promised everything and anything, you know, Bitcoin, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. And so far, all we've seen is anything but Bitcoin. We have stable coins, we have central bank digital currencies, we've got everything except for the promises that were made initially. So whatever this is, maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. I don't really care, honestly. I'll take a wait and see approach. But the lesson for me is, don't trust any politician. At the end of the day, they rarely have your best interest at heart.
Yeah. I think for me, what I like about Mark's tweet is not that, like, I think it's very easy to overplay Trump talking about Bitcoin as something meaningful, which I am just highly skeptical that is, for all the reasons you described, Tony. Where I think he's hitting the nail on the head, though, like, I truly believe you are violating, if you have a fiduciary duty to act in the best interest of your clients as a financial advisor, and you haven't read the Bitcoin standard, and you haven't listened to a Bitcoin only, not crypto, not blockchain podcast, and you couldn't explain what the difficulty adjustment is, for example, you are in complete violation of that agreement. And the 99% of financial advisors who are operating that way should all have their licenses revoked. Like, I truly believe that. It's the best performing asset of the last 16 years, and there's a reason. What I said in my post was, it's not magic, it's math. You just need to be willing to put in the time to do the work. Adam, I'm curious if you'd share that sentiment, or what maybe your message to financial advisors might be.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think there's any excuse in 2025. You know, it's fine if you have a different opinion than what I have. Like, that's I don't have a problem with that, but to not have an educated opinion about Bitcoin in 2025 is, I think, a breach of that fiduciary duty. So, you know, if you're listening to this, you better start studying. It's really not that hard, too. And that's part of the reason why there's no excuse. It's understanding the value proposition of Bitcoin. And as you mentioned, some of the principles of Bitcoin, such as the difficulty adjustment and the functions of how Bitcoin operates, it's not that hard. They're very, very simple.
It's literally a weekend read. Like, read the Bitcoin standard. Just start there. Like, I think they're equally good books. I think The Big Print is great. I think Gradually Then Suddenly. But, like, it's literally, you can spend a weekend saying, like, I want to at least take that first big step. And I just don't even know how few financial advisors have done that, you know? I tell them to allocate to the ETFs. Hell, like, I don't like the ETFs, but, like, it's... At least it means you've taken that step to understand something. Like, this, the number is going to continue to go up, you know, if you've got a long enough time horizon. And that's maybe my frustration with a lot of these people.
I think it's cool that Trump's posting about it, though. It kind of, in my view, seems like he's, I don't know, at least taking steps. I agree. I don't know if I can definitively say I think that Trump completely understands Bitcoin at this point, but he definitely understands enough about it to know that people that he cares about understand it. And that's, I think, a big part of why he's making it a part of his platform. Speaking of which, I don't know if you saw, did you see that his company, Trump Media, bought $2 billion worth of Bitcoin?
I saw that, almost threw it into this conversation. I didn't have time to look into it. Is it wrapped Bitcoin or is it real Bitcoin?
I don't think we know. Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah, I don't think we know yet. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, maybe we can't trust Trump on Bitcoin. One thing we probably can trust him on is that he wants lower interest rates. He says that we deserve to be at 1%. Larry Lepard reshared that. He said, here we go. Big print coming our way. A lot of news floating around about Powell either resigning, being fired. He's under investigation, supposedly. I saw that just come to the top of my news feed today. I'm curious, do you think before his term is up next year, do you think we're going to have action on this? Or do you think he's going to capitulate and lower interest rates because all the other central banks are? I don't know, Adam, I'll let you take that one first. And then, Tony, I'd love to hear your commentary.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with a good friend yesterday about this, and I don't think, let me reframe this. I think that we're in a situation where Trump is objectively right. He says we have to get interest rates down to 1%. I think that no matter where you stand on this, you know, in terms of if you're taking the approach of maintaining stability in the economy, 1% is absolutely necessary at this point, just right now, specifically right now, because of all the debt that is maturing in the, you know, for the U.S. So the Treasury basically had all this debt under the Yellen administration that's maturing this year, and it's got to get rolled over. And that debt was historically very low, you know, so we're talking like 1%, somewhere in that ballpark, of all this Treasury debt, and that's coming due. And now we're rolling the debt over, and we're moving that from 1% now to the current rates, which are like 4.5%. And so what that does is it increases our debt liability by like 4x, right? So if you think about it, the U.S. is spending almost $1 trillion a year just in debt payments. Now, imagine 4 times that, just simply because the interest rates are where they are. And so I think part of the biggest part of the reason why Trump is trying to fight to get the interest rates down is so they can refinance their debt. Think about it like your credit card, if you have one. The interest rate that you're paying on that credit card is, if you're keeping a balance on that, that's how much you're paying every year. Imagine paying 4 times that on a credit card. So maybe your credit card's, just say for easy round numbers, let's say it's 10%. And now all of a sudden it's 40%. Now your interest payments on that credit card are 4 times higher. And now if you thought it was hard to pay off a credit card with a big balance at 10%, imagine what it's going to be at 40%. So that's kind of what the U.S. is looking at right now, and why I think that lowering rates isn't necessarily a matter of opinion. It's like a dire need. There is essentially no other solution, because if we roll over our debt right now at the current rates, or at least the big chunk, which is maturing this year in 2025, like I said, the interest payments on that debt are completely unserviceable, more so than they already are. And so I think that Trump's going to strong arm the Fed. My thesis is Jerome Powell is going to be the scapegoat. He'll be the fall guy, and everybody's going to point fingers at each other. I don't know if he's going to be removed from office. It could be a situation where the Fed go ahead and lower the interest rates, and they blame the current administration, and they say, well, we had to, or, you know, Jerome Powell throws his hands up and says, well, I was going to lose my job if I didn't do this, or something to that nature. But I think they're going to try to lower rates as much as they can right now. They don't really have much of a choice. I think the only reason why they haven't so far is they've been reluctant to, at least, is, and this is probably a much bigger subject, but I think it really comes down to the fact that the market hasn't really let them lower rates, because they tried to lower rates. If you guys remember, we started lowering rates a few months ago, and then they paused. And I believe that was because they tried to lower rates. It was ineffective. The market didn't respond. In fact, the treasuries went the opposite direction that they were hoping them to. So instead of the rates coming down, they went up, because nobody wants our treasuries. And I think that actually plays into what we were talking about earlier. I think that's a big reason why we're passing this Genius Act legislation. We're essentially throwing these treasuries into these stable coins and shoving them down people's throats that are being exposed to these CBDCs, these stable coins, right? So the demand is globally for these stable coins, but these people and other countries that are, you know, trying to hop off of their burning ship onto the stable coins, they don't care about treasuries. They're not, you know, investing in T-bills or the 10-year or anything like that. Like, these people are just trying to get into a better currency. But the Genius Act forces these treasuries inside of USDT, essentially, so the tether. So it's creating artificial demand. Artificial may be a strong word there, but it's creating demand for these treasuries that has been waning, And so now that there's demand for the treasuries, maybe they can get the interest rates down. I think that that's kind of how this all plays in.
Yeah. Stablecoins are a win-win for authoritarians, basically. Tony, lower rates, what do you think happens to Bitcoin?
if you're banking on Bitcoin in self-custody, you're going to be, you know, celebrating like it's, you know, it's like 1999 again. Whether they lower the rates or not, like, who cares, man? Like, the system is finished. It's dead. Whether it's 4%, 1%, they can't afford any of it. So all these theatrics about, you know, refinancing and all that, like, what are you trying to save? You're finished. You're out. You're bankrupt. There's nothing about you that's left anymore. And what's really upsetting is that so many people are still tied to all these moronic decisions. We raise one day, we lower one day, we do this, we do that. Like, who cares? Why are you still, you know, willingly saving your time and energy in a bankrupt, rotten, corrupt, failing, no, there's no more life to system? Like, that's on you. But so many people, like, they don't want to think. They're completely unaware of what's going on. This is what's so mind-blowing in 2025. Like, despite everything that we've seen, so many people, either they don't care or whatever their reason may be, but they insist on, you know, insist of living a life of hell. So once you step out of that world, none of this news matters. Like, it literally does not matter. You're sitting up here in space watching the whole thing blow up and you're like, yeah, sucks. Too bad for those that, you know, weren't paying attention, who got hurt. But, you know, the opportunity was there for everyone for 16 years, but only those that did the work, you know, are finally on that life raft.
For sure. I think that's maybe the big takeaway here is, like, all this stuff is, you know, interesting to talk about. Doesn't really matter if you just got Bitcoin in self-custody and you're operating to the best of your ability on a Bitcoin standard and evaluating your savings and in Bitcoin terms. Gents, we're going to jump right to the end here because we're a little short on time. But the SEC chair, Paul Atkins, declares ETH is not a security. This has been an ongoing debate in Bitcoin and crypto. What's a security? What's not? Adam, I think you pulled up, you sort of asked Grok about, is ETH a security? How would you frame it based on the Howey test? I'd be curious to hear sort of your, just a quick summary of what you came up with.
Yeah, I just basically asked Grok to take all the opinion out of it and just look at the Howey test and consolidate the info. And essentially what came back was that the 2014 ICO Ethereum is almost certainly a security. In fact, Grok says it passes on all four prongs. So it's a security based on the investment of money, it's a common enterprise, expectation of profits, and solely from the efforts of others. So 2014 ETH is absolutely a security. There is some ambiguity, though, in current ETH, and it basically says that, you know, it may or may not qualify as a security based solely on the Howey test. Now, I would say, I think one of the things that we witnessed over the last few months was this major hack that happened from Bybit. And the Lazarus Group out of North Korea hacked this exchange. They basically injected some code, which allowed them to manipulate a smart contract and withdraw the funds from Ethereum. Basically, Ethereum's broken, don't use it. But the side note here is the world was looking at Vitalik, and we were all asking, you know, ourselves and Vitalik, hey, are you going to roll the chain back? And so here's the thing, guys. If we're asking whether or not Vitalik is going to roll the chain back, and we're also asking, is ETH centralized? Those two things don't match, okay? Like, if one guy can roll the chain back, ETH is a security, okay? That's right. My opinion. Right. I don't think that there's any argument there. He didn't, and I think this is why. You know, he doesn't want ETH to be deemed a security. I think he had every reason and right to roll the chain back, you know, to keep the coins out of these, you know, terrorist hackers or whatever, but he didn't. But I believe he absolutely could have. He's done it before, and he could do it again.
Yeah, I think that's the big takeaway is the fact that anyone was curious if he was going to. That tells you everything you need to know about how decentralized, or rather not decentralized, ETH is. Tony.
Nothing more to add, man. Ethereum is, you know, the mother of all shitcoins. It definitely fails the Howey test. It's 100% a security. Anyone that disputes that, you know, is obviously has some either bad intentions or is a bad actor at some level. But again, you know, once you're out of the system, you don't care about any of that garbage. It's really, you're desensitized to it all. You're already living on such a, you know, a higher frequency, a much cleaner frequency, that none of this stuff matters, which is why, you know, I find it fascinating that people deliberately invite complexities and pain into their lives when the solution is literally six steps away.
Yeah, I would just say for anyone listening, if you have the option, if you are fortunate and privileged to have the option to just buy Bitcoin and ignore what the stablecoin, the Genius Act says, ignore stablecoins, ignore what the Federal Reserve is doing, ignore what the SEC says about Ethereum or any other cryptocurrency, and you can just take self-custody of your Bitcoin, you will live a much better, more peaceful life. So that's maybe my takeaway for the for rounding off banter here. Gents, thank you guys for everyone listening. I appreciate you tuning in. Stick around for another minute to hear a little bit about the Bitcoin way. But Adam, why don't you give people a handoff, tell them where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm on X at Adam Semeca. So feel free to follow me over there if any of you wish.
And go check out Mana Bitcoin, very, very slick wallet. So would encourage everyone to do that as well. We're still testing it, playing around with it, but it's an awesome product. So thank you guys for taking time. Great chatting as always. We'll have you back soon, Adam.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.